no memory of how I got there. In the distance, wildflowers dusted rolling green hills. The breeze smelled of lavender. The light was warm and rich as if the air had turned to butter. My thoughts moved sluggishly. Light. Sunlight was bad for dwarves. I was pretty sure I'd been traveling with a dwarf, someone who had slapped me and saved my life. Blitz? He stood to my left, holding his pith helmet at his side. Blitz, your hat! I was afraid he'd already become stone. Then he turned. His eyes were stormy and distant.
It's okay, kid. This isn't regular sunlight. We're not on Midgard anymore.
He sounded like he was talking through wax paper. The squirrel's yap had left a crackling in my ears and some corrosive thoughts rattling around in my brain. Ratatosk. I couldn't finish the sentence. Just saying his name made me want to curl up in the fetal position.
Yeah, Blitz said. His bark is literally worse than his bite.
Blitz looked down, blinking rapidly.
He's the most destructive creature in the world tree. He spends his time running up and down the trunk, carrying insults from the eagle who lives at the top, to Nidhogg, the dragon who lives at the roots.
I gazed toward the hills. Faint sounds of music seemed to be coming from that direction, or maybe it was the static in my ears. Why would a squirrel do that?
To damage the tree, Blitz said. Ratatosk keeps the eagle and the dragon whipped into a frenzy. He tells them lies, rumors, nasty gossip about each other. His words can... well, you know what his words can do. The dragon Nidhogg is always chewing on the roots of the world tree, trying to kill it. The eagle flaps his wings and creates windstorms that rip the branches and cause devastation throughout the nine worlds. Ratatosk makes sure the two monsters stay angry and in competition with each other, to see which one can destroy their end of Yggdrasil faster.
But that's... crazy. The squirrel lives in the tree. Blitz grimaced.
We all do, kid. People have destructive impulses. Some of us want to see the world in ruins just for the fun of it, even if we're ruined along with it.
Ratatosk's chatter echoed in my head.
You have failed. You could not save your mother.
The squirrel had driven me to despair, but I could see how his bark might stir up other emotions, hatred, bitterness, self-loathing. How did you keep your wits? I asked Blitz. When the squirrel barked, what did you hear? Blitz ran his fingers across the brim of his pith helmet, pinching the edge of the black veil.
Nothing I don't tell myself all the time, kid. We should get going.
He trudged off toward the hills. Despite his short stride, I had to power walk to keep up. We crossed a stream where a picturesque little frog sat on a lily pad. Doves and falcons spiraled through the air like they were playing tag. I half expected a chorus line of fuzzy animals to pop out of the wildflowers and launch into a Disney musical number. I'm guessing this is not Nidavellir, I said as we climbed the hill. Blitzen snorted.
No, much worse.
Alfheim?
Worse.
Blitzen stopped just short of the crest and took a deep breath.
Come on, let's get this over with.
At the top of the hill, I froze.
Whoa!
Down the other side, green fields stretched to the horizon. Meadows were strewn with picnic blankets. Crowds of people were hanging out, eating, laughing, chatting, playing music, flying kites, tossing beach balls. It was the world's largest, most laid-back outdoor concert, minus the concert. Some folks were dressed in various bits of armor. Most had weapons, but they didn't seem very interested in using them. In the shade of an oak tree, a couple of young ladies were sword fighting, but after crossing blades a few times, they got bored, dropped their weapons, and started chatting. Another guy lounged in a lawn chair, flirting with the girl on his left, while he casually parried attacks from the guy standing on his right. Blitz pointed to the crest of the next hill, about half a mile away, where a strange palace gleamed. It looked like an upside-down Noah's Ark, made of gold and silver.
"Sess room near," said Blitzen. "The hall of many seats. If we're lucky, maybe she won't be home."
"Who?" Instead of answering, he waded into the crowd. We hadn't gone 20 feet before a guy on a nearby picnic blanket called,
"Hey, Blitzen, what's up, dude?"
Blitzen ground his teeth so hard I could hear them popping.
"Hello, Miles."
"Yeah, I'm good."
Miles raised his sword absently as another guy in beach trunks and a muscle shirt charged toward him with a battle axe. The attacker screamed,
"Die!" "Just kidding."
Then he walked away eating a chocolate bar.
"So, Blitz," Miles said, "what brings you to Casa de Awesome?" "Nice seeing you, Miles."
Blitzen grabbed my arm and led me onward.
"Okay, cool,"
Miles called after us.
"Keep in touch."
"Who was that?" I asked.
"Nobody."
"How do you know him?"
"I don't."
As we made our way toward the upside-down Ark Mansion, more people stopped and said hello to Blitzen. A few greeted me and complimented me on my sword, or my hair, or my shoes. One girl said, "Oh, nice ears," which didn't even make sense.
"Everybody is so stupid," Blitzen offered.
I was going to say mellow. He grunted.
"This is Folkvanger, the field of the army, or you could translate it as the people's battlefield."
"So this is Volkswagen." I scanned the crowds, wondering if I would spot my mother, but I couldn't imagine her in a place like this. There was too much lounging around, not enough action. My mom would have rousted these warriors to their feet, led them on a 10-mile hike, then insisted they set up their own campsites if they wanted any dinner. "They don't seem like much of an army."
"Yeah, well," Blitz said, "these fallen are just as powerful as the Inheriar, but they have a different attitude. This realm is one little subsection of Vanaheim, sort of the Veneer God's flip-side version of Valhalla."
I tried to picture myself spending eternity here. Valhalla had its good points, but as far as I'd seen, it didn't have picnics or beach balls, and I definitely wouldn't describe it as mellow. Still, I wasn't sure I liked Folkvanger any better. "So half the worthy dead go here," I remembered. "Half go to Valhalla. How do they pick who goes where? Is it a coin toss?"
"That would make more sense, actually."
"But I was trying to get us to Nidavellir. Why did we come here?" Blitzen stared at the mansion atop the hill.
"You were looking for the path we needed for our quest. That path led us through Folkvanger. Unfortunately, I think I know why. Let's go pay our respects before I lose my nerve."
As we approached the gates, I realized Sessrumnir wasn't just built to look like an upside-down ship. It actually was an upside-down ship. The rows of tall windows were oar slots. The sloping walls of the hull were made from clinker gold planks riveted with silver nails. The main entrance had a long awning that would have served as a gangplank. "Why is it a boat?" I asked.
"What?"
Blitzen fiddled nervously with his carnation.
"Not so unusual. Your Norse ancestors made lots of buildings by turning their ships upside down. In the case of Sessrumnir, when the Day of Doom comes around, they'll just flip the palace over and voila! It's a vessel big enough for all the warriors of Folkvanger to sail nobly to their deaths. Sort of like we're doing now."
He led me inside. I'd been expecting a gloomy interior like the hold of a ship, but the hall of many seats was more like a cathedral. The ceiling rose all the way to the keel. The oar hole windows cross-hatched the air with bars of light. The entire space was open. No separate rooms or partitions, just clusters of sofas, comfy chairs, throw pillows, and freestanding hammocks, most of which were occupied by snoring warriors. I hoped the 500,000 inhabitants of Folkvanger liked one another's company, because there was no privacy. Me being me, the main thing I wondered was where they all went to the bathroom. Down the center of the hall ran an aisle of Persian carpets, flanked by braziers with glowing spheres of gold light. At the far end stood a throne on a raised dais. Blitz marched in that direction, ignoring the warriors who greeted him with "Dude!" and "Sup, dwarf man!" and "Welcome home!"
Welcome home?
In front of the dais, a cozy fire crackled in the hearth. Piles of jewelry and precious gems glittered here and there as if somebody had swept them up just to get them off the floor. On either side of the steps lounged a calico house cat the size of a saber-toothed tiger. The throne was carved from wood as soft and buttery as the light. Lindenwood, maybe. The back was draped with a cloak of downy feathers, like on the underside of a falcon. In the throne itself sat the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen. She looked maybe 20 years old, surrounded by an aura of golden radiance that made me realize what Blitzen meant earlier when he'd said the daylight here wasn't normal. The entire realm of Folkvanger was warm and bright, not because of the sun, but because it basked in this woman's power. Her blonde hair fell across her shoulder in a single long plait. Her white halter top showed off her tan shoulders and smooth midriff. Her knee-length skirt was belted with a gold braid, holding a sheathed knife and a ring of keys. Around her neck was a dazzling piece of jewelry, a lacework collar of gold and gems, like Rand's net in miniature, except with rubies and diamonds instead of sailors' souls and hubcaps. The woman fixed me with her sky-blue eyes. When she smiled, heat traveled from the tips of my ears right down to my toes. I would have done anything to make her keep smiling at me. If she'd told me to jump off the world tree into oblivion, I would have done it in a second. I remembered her picture from my old children's mythology book and realized how ridiculously it undersold her beauty. The goddess of love was very pretty. She had cats. I knelt before my aunt, the twin sister of my father.
Freya.
My dear Magnus, she said, how nice to meet you in person.
She turned to Blitzen, who was glowering at his boots.
And how are you, Blitzen? Asked the goddess.
Blitzen sighed.
I'm fine, Mom.
Chapter 39. Freya is pretty. She has cats.
Mom?
I was so startled, I wasn't sure I'd said it aloud.
Wait. You. Blitzen.
Mom? Blitzen kicked me in the shin. Freya continued smiling.
I suppose my son didn't tell you? He's quite modest. Blitzen, dear. You look very nice, but could you straighten your collar?
Blitzen did, muttering under his breath.
Been a little busy running for my life.
And dear, Freya said, are you sure about the vest?
Yes, Mom, Blitz grumbled. I'm sure about the vest. Vests are making a comeback.
Well, I suppose you know best.
Freya winked at me.
Blitzen is a genius with fabrics and fashion. The other dwarves don't appreciate his expertise, but I think it's marvelous. He wants to open his own...
Anyway,
Blitzen said a little too loudly,
we're on this quest.
Freya clapped.
I know, it's very exciting. You're trying to get to Nidavellir to find out more about the rope Gleipnir. And so, naturally... The world tree directed you first to me.
One of her cats clawed at a Persian rug, ripping several thousand dollars of weaving into fluff. I tried not to imagine what the cat could do to me.
So, Lady Freya, I said, can you help us?
Of course, said the goddess. More importantly, you can help me.
Here we go, said Blitzen.
Son, be polite. First, Magnus, how are you faring with your sword?
I missed a beat. I guess I still didn't think of the Sword of Summer as mine. I pulled off the pendant, and the blade took shape in my hand. In Freya's presence, it was silent and still, like it was playing dead. Maybe it was afraid of cats.
I haven't had much time to use it, I said. Just got it back from Ran.
Yes, I know.
Freya's nose wrinkled with the slightest hint of distaste.
And you delivered an apple to Utgard Loki in exchange. Perhaps not the wisest move, but I won't criticize your choices.
You just did, Blitzen said.
The goddess ignored his comment.
At least you didn't promise me to Utgard Loki. Usually when giants make demands, they want apples and my hand in marriage.
She flipped her braid over her shoulder.
It gets very tiresome.
I had a hard time looking at Freya without staring. There really wasn't anything safe to focus on. Her eyes, her lips, her belly button. I silently scolded myself.
This is Blitzen's mom. This is my aunt.
I decided to focus on her left eyebrow. There was nothing entrancing about a left eyebrow.
So anyway, I said, I haven't really killed anything yet with the eyebrow. I mean the sword.
Freya sat forward.
Killed anything with it? Oh, dear, that's the least of its powers. Your first task is to befriend the sword. Have you done this?
I imagine the sword and me sitting side by side in a movie theater, a tub of popcorn between us. I imagine dragging the sword on a leash, taking it for a walk through the park.
How do I befriend a sword? Ah, well, if you have to ask...
Look, Aunt Freya, I said, couldn't I just give the sword to you for safekeeping? It's a veneer weapon. You're Frey's sister. You've got a few hundred thousand well-armed, laid-back warriors to guard it from Surt.
Oh, no, she said sadly. The sword is already in your hands, Magnus. You summoned it from the river. You have laid claim to it. The best we can hope for is that Sumerbrander, the Sword of Summer, will allow you to use it. Keeping it from Surt is your job now, as long as you manage to stay alive.
I hate my job.
Blitz elbowed me.
Don't say that, kid. You'll offend the blade.
I looked down at the gleaming runes on the blade.
I'm sorry, long, sharp piece of metal. Did that hurt your feelings? Also, if you allow people to wield you, why would you allow an evil fire giant to do so? Why wouldn't you want to go back to Frey, or at least his lovely sister here?
The sword did not reply.
Magnus, said the goddess, this is no jesting matter. The sword is fated to belong to Surt sooner or later. You know this. The sword cannot escape its destiny any more than you can escape yours.
I envisioned Loki chuckling as he lounged on the high seat of Odin.
Our choices can alter the details. That's how we rebel against destiny.
Besides, Freya said, the sword would never allow me to use it. Sumerbrander holds me partially responsible for its loss. It resents me almost as much as it resents Frey. Maybe it was my imagination, but the sword seemed to become colder and heavier.
But it's Frey's sword, I protested.
Blitzen grunted. It was. I told you, kid, he gave it away for love.
The calico cat on Freya's right rolled over and stretched. Its spotted tummy was pretty cute,
except for the fact that I kept imagining how many warriors it could comfortably digest.
When Frey sat on Odin's throne, continued the goddess, he did so for my sake. It was a dark time for me. I was wandering the nine worlds, grieving and bereft. Frey hoped that by sitting in the throne, he might find me. Instead, the throne showed him his heart's desire, a frost giantess, Gerd. He fell madly in love with her.
I stared at Freya's eyebrow. Her story wasn't helping my opinion of my dad.
He fell in love at first sight, with a frost giantess.
Oh, she was beautiful, Freya said. Silver to Frey's gold, cold to his warmth, winter to his summer. You've heard that opposites attract? She was his perfect match. But she was a giant. She would never agree to marry a Vanir. Her family would not allow it. Knowing this, Frey fell into despair. Crops stopped growing. Summer lost its warmth. Finally, Frey's servant and best friend came to ask him what was wrong.
Skirnir, I said. The dude who got the sword.
Freya frowned. Yes. Him.
Blitzen took a step back, like he was afraid his mom might explode. For the first time, I realized how scary the goddess could look. Beautiful, yes, but also terrifying and powerful. I imagined her armed with a shield and spear, riding with the Valkyries. If I saw her on the battlefield, I would run the other direction.
Skirnir promised he could deliver Gerd within 9 days, said the goddess. All he required was a small fee for his services, the Sword of Summer. Frey was so love-stricken that he asked no questions. The sword, I can only imagine how it felt when it was betrayed by its master. It allowed Skirnir to wield it, though not happily.
Freya sighed.
That is why the sword will never allow Frey to use it again. And that is why, at Ragnarok, Frey is fated to die because he does not have his weapon.
I wasn't sure what to say. Bummer didn't seem to cover it. I remembered Loki's warning about sitting on Odin's throne, looking for my heart's desire. What would I look for? My mother's whereabouts. Would I give up a sword to find her? Of course. Would I risk getting killed or even hastening doomsday? Yes.
So maybe I couldn't judge my father.
Blitz gripped my arm.
Don't look so glum, kid. I have faith in you.
Freya's expression softened.
Yes, Magnus. You will learn to use the sword. And I don't mean just swinging it like a brute. Once you discover its full abilities, you will be formidable indeed.
I don't suppose it comes with a user's manual?
Freya laughed gently. I'm sorry I didn't get you in Folkvanger, Magnus. You would have been a good addition to my followers. But Valhalla called you first. It was meant to be.
I wanted to argue that the Norns, the Inheriar, and the captain of the Valkyries didn't seem to think so. Thinking about Ganilla made me remember our flight into the World Tree, and Sam and Hearthstone hiding under a veil from a murderous squirrel. Our friends. We got separated from them on Yggdrasil. Freya, do you know if they made it here safely?
Freya peered into the distance. They are not in Folkvanger. I see them. Yes. Wait. Lost them again.
Ah!
She winced. That was a close call, but they're fine for the moment. A resourceful pair. I sense they will not come here. You must continue on and meet them in Nida Valir. Which brings us to your quest.
And how we can help you, Blit said.
Exactly, darling. Your need brought you here. Need speaks strongly when you travel the world tree. After all, that's how my poor son found himself being a bondservant to Mimir.
We're not having this discussion again, Lit said.
Freya turned over her lovely hands.
Fine, moving along. As you well know, the dwarves created the rope Gleipnir, which bound Fenris Wolf.
Yes, Mom, Blit said, rolling his eyes. Everyone learns that nursery rhyme in kindergarten.
I squinted at him. Nursery rhyme?
Gleipnir, Gleipnir, strong and stout, wrap the wolf around the snout. Humans don't learn that one?
I don't think so.
At any rate, said the goddess, the dwarves will be able to tell you more about how the rope was made and how it might be replaced.
Replaced?
I willed the sword back in pendant form. Even so, hanging around my neck, it seemed to weigh 100 pounds.
I thought the idea was to keep the rope from getting cut in the first place.
Ah, Freya tapped her lips.
Magnus, I don't want to discourage you, but I'd say there is a good chance, perhaps a 75% chance, that even if you keep the sword from Surt, the fire giant will still find a way to free Fenris Wolf. In such a case, you must be prepared with a replacement rope.
My tongue felt almost as heavy as my sword pendant.
Yeah, that's not at all discouraging. The last time the wolf was free, didn't it take all the gods working together to bind him?
Freya nodded.
It took 3 tries and much trickery. Poor Tyr lost his hand. But don't worry, the wolf will never fall for the hand-in-the-mouth trick again. If it comes to that, you will have to find another way to bind him.
I bet Miles out in the people's battlefield didn't have these sorts of problems. I wondered if he'd be interested in trading places for a while, going after Fenris Wolf while I played volleyball.
Freya, can you at least tell us where the wolf is? On Lyngvi, the Isle of Heather.
The goddess tapped her chin.
Let's see, today is Thursday the 16th.
You mean Thursday?
That's what I said. The island will rise on the full moon 6 days from now, on the 22nd, which is Woden's day.
Wednesday? I asked.
That's what I said. So you should have plenty of time to get my earrings before you seek out the wolf. Unfortunately, the island's location shifts every year, as the branches of Yggdrasil sway in the winds of the void. The dwarves should be able to help you locate it. Blitzen's father knew the way. Others might as well.
At the mention of his father, Blitz's face clouded over. Very carefully, he took the carnation from his vest and tossed it into the hearth fire.
And what do you want, mother? What's your part in this?
Oh, my needs are simple.
Her fingers fluttered over her golden lace collar.
I want you to commission some earrings to match my necklace Brisingamen. Something nice. Not too flashy, but noticeable. Blitzen, you have excellent taste. I trust you.
Blitzen glared at the nearest pile of riches, which contained dozens, maybe hundreds of earrings.
You know who I have to talk to in need of a leer. Only one dwarf has the skill to replace the rope Gleipnir.
Yes, Freya agreed. Fortunately, he's also an excellent jeweler, so he will be able to accommodate both our requests.
Unfortunately, said Blitzen, this particular dwarf wants me dead.
Freya waved aside his objection.
Oh, he can't possibly. Not after all this time.
Dwarves have very long memories, Mother.
Well, generous payment will soften his attitude. I can help with that.
She called across the hall.
Dimitri, I need you.
From one of the sofa clusters, three guys scrambled to their feet, grabbed their musical instruments, and hustled over. They wore matching Hawaiian shirts, Bermuda shorts, and sandals. Their hair was greased back in pompadours. The first guy had a guitar. The second had bongos. The third had a triangle. The guy with the guitar bowed to Freya.
At your service, my lady.
Freya gave me a conspiratorial smile, as if she had some wonderful secret to share.
Magnus, meet Dimitri and the Duruns, the best band you've never heard of. They died in 1963, just as they were about to get their big break. So sad. They valiantly swerved their car off Route 1 to spare a busload of school children from a terrible collision. In honor of their selfless deaths, I brought them here to Folkvanger.
And we're very grateful, my lady, said Dimitri. Being your house band has been a sweet gig.
Dimitri, I need to cry, she said. Could you please play the one about my lost husband? I love that song.
I hate that song,
Blitzen mumbled under his breath. The trio hummed. Dimitri strummed a chord. I whispered to Blitzen,
Why does your mom need to cry?
He turned toward me and made a finger down the throat gesture.
Just watch. You'll see.
Dimitri began to sing.
Oh, odor. Ode, ode, odor. Where is that odor? Where is my love?
The other two musicians harmonized on the chorus.
Ode wanders far. My odor is missing. How odd it is not to be kissing. My odor, my sweet ode, odor.
Triangle. Bongo solo. Blitzen whispered,
Her godly husband was an Acer named Odor, Ode for short.
I wasn't sure which name was worse. He disappeared, I guessed.
2,000 years ago, Blitzen said. Freya went looking for him, disappeared herself for almost a century while she searched. She never found him, but that's why Frey sat in Odin's chair in the first place, to look for his sister.
The goddess leaned forward and cupped her face in her hands. She drew a shaky breath. When she looked up again, she was weeping, but her tears were small pellets of red gold. She wept until her hands were full of glittering droplets.
Oh, odor, she sobbed. Why did you leave me? I miss you still.
She sniffled and nodded to the musicians.
Thank you, Dimitri. That's enough.
Dimitri and his friends bowed. Then the best band I wished I'd never heard of shuffled away. Freya raised her cupped hands. Out of nowhere, a leather pouch appeared, hovering above her lap. Freya spilled her tears into the bag.
Here, my son.
Freya passed the pouch to Blitzen.
That should be enough payment if Eitri Jr. is at all reasonable.
Blitzen stared glumly at the pouch of tears.
The only problem is, he's not.
You will succeed, Freya said. The fate of my earrings is in your hands.
I scratched the back of my neck. Lady Freya, thanks for the tears and all, but couldn't you just go to Nida Valir and pick out your own earrings? I mean, isn't shopping half the fun? Blitzen shot me a warning look. Freya's blue eyes turned a few degrees colder. Her fingertips traced the filigree of her necklace.
No, Magnus, I can't just go shopping in Nida Valir. You know what happened when I bought Brisingamen from the dwarves. Do you want that to happen again?
Actually, I had no idea what she was talking about, but she didn't wait for an answer.
Every time I go to Nidavellir, I get myself in trouble, she said. It's not my fault. The dwarves know my weakness for beautiful jewelry. Believe me, it's much better that I send you. Now, if you'll excuse me, it's time for our evening luau with optional combat. Goodbye, Magnus. Goodbye, my darling Blitzen.
The floor opened beneath us, and we fell into darkness. Chapter 40. My friend evolved from a, nope, I can't say it. I don't remember landing. I found myself on a dark street on a cold, cloudy night. Three-story clapboard row houses edged the sidewalk. At the end of the block, a tavern's grimy windows glowed with neon drink signs. This is Southie, I said, around D Street. Blitzen shook his head.
This is Nidavellir, kid. It looks like South Boston. Or, rather, South Boston looks like it. I told you, Boston is the nexus. The nine worlds blend together there and affect one another. Southie has a definite dwarvish feeling to it.
I thought Nidavellir would be underground, with claustrophobic tunnels and...
Kid, that's a cavern ceiling above your head. It's just a long way up and hidden by air pollution. We don't have daytime here. It's this dark all the time.
I stared into the murky clouds. After being in Freya's realm, the world of the dwarves seemed oppressive, but it also seemed more familiar, more genuine. I guess no true Bostonian would trust a place that was sunny and pleasant all the time. But a gritty, perpetually cold and gloomy neighborhood? Throw in a couple of Dunkin' Donuts locations, and I'm right at home. Blitz wrapped his pith helmet in its dark netting. The whole thing collapsed into a small black handkerchief, which he tucked into his coat pocket.
We should get going.
We're not going to talk about what happened up there in Volkswagen?
What's there to say?
For one thing, we're cousins. Blitz shrugged.
I'm happy to be your cousin, kid, but children of the gods don't put much stock in that sort of connection. Godly family lines are so tangled, thinking about it will drive you crazy. Everybody's related to everybody.
But you're a demigod, I said. That's a good thing, right?
I hate the word demigod. I prefer born with a target on my back.
Come on, Blitz. Freya is your mom. That's important information you kind of forgot to mention.
Freya is my mother, he agreed. A lot of Svartalfs are descended from Freya. Down here, it's not such a big deal. She mentioned how she got Brisingamen. A few millennia ago, she was strolling through Nidavellir, who knows why, and she came across these four dwarves who were crafting the necklace. She was obsessed. She had to have it. The dwarves said, sure, for the right price. Freya had to marry each of them, one after the other, for one day each.
She, I wanted to say, gross, she married four dwarves? Then I remembered who was telling the story. Oh.
Yeah.
Lit sounded miserable.
She had four dwarfish children, one for each marriage.
I frowned. Wait. If she was married for one day to each dwarf, and a pregnancy lasts... The math doesn't work out on that.
Don't ask me. Goddesses live by their own rules. Anyway, she got the necklace. She was ashamed of herself for marrying dwarves. Tried to keep it a secret. But the thing is, she loved dwarven jewelry. She kept coming back to Nidavellir to pick out new pieces, and every time...
Wow.
Blitzen's shoulders slumped.
That's the main difference between dark elves and regular dwarves. The Svartovs are taller and generally more handsome because we have Vanir blood. We're descended from Freya. You say I'm a demigod. I say I'm a receipt. My dad crafted a pair of earrings for Freya. She married him for a day. She couldn't resist his craftsmanship. He couldn't resist her beauty. Now she sends me to purchase a new pair of earrings because she's tired of the old ones, and Asgard forbid she finds herself saddled with another little Blitzen.
The bitterness in his voice could have melted iron plating. I wanted to tell him I understood how he felt, but I wasn't sure I did. Even if I never knew my dad, I'd had my mom. That had always been enough for me. For Blitzen, not so much. I wasn't sure what had happened to his father, but I remembered what he'd told me at the Esplanade Lagoon.
You're not the only one who's lost family to the wolves, kid. Come on, he told me. If we stand in the street any longer, we'll get mugged for this bag of tears. Dwarves can smell red gold a mile away.
He pointed to the bar on the corner.
I'll buy you a drink at Nabby's Tavern.
Nabby's restored my faith in dwarves, because it was in fact a claustrophobic tunnel. The ceiling was a low-clearance hazard. The walls were papered with old fight posters like Donner the Destroyer vs. Mini-Murderer, One Night Only, featuring pictures of muscular, snarling dwarves in wrestling masks. Mismatched tables and chairs were occupied by a dozen mismatched dwarves, some Svartalfs like Blitzen, who could easily have passed for human, some much shorter guys who could have easily passed for garden gnomes. A few of the patrons glanced at us, but nobody seemed shocked that I was a human, if they even realized. The idea that I could pass for a dwarf was pretty disturbing. The most unreal thing about the bar was Taylor Swift's Blank Space blasting from the speakers. Dwarves like human music? I asked Blitzen.
You mean humans like our music?
But I had a sudden image of Taylor Swift's mom and Freya having a girl's night out in need of Valyr. Never mind. As we made our way toward the bar, I realized that the furniture wasn't just mismatched. Every single table and chair was unique, apparently handcrafted from various metals with different designs and upholstery. One table was shaped like a bronze wagon wheel with a glass top. Another had a tin and brass chessboard hammered into the surface. Some chairs had wheels. Others had adjustable booster seats. Some had massage controls or propellers on the back. Over by the left wall, three dwarves were playing darts. The board's rings rotated and blew steam. One dwarf tossed his dart, which buzzed toward the target like a tiny drone. While it was still in flight, another dwarf took a shot. His dart rocketed toward the drone dart and exploded, knocking it out of the air. The first dwarf just grunted,
"Nice shot!"
Finally, we reached the polished oak bar, where Nabby himself was waiting. I could tell who he was because of my highly trained deductive mind, and also because his stained yellow apron read, "Hi, I'm Nabby." I thought he was the tallest dwarf I'd met so far, until I realized he was standing on a catwalk behind the counter. Nabby was actually only 2 feet tall, including the shock of black hair that stuck up from his scalp like a sea urchin. His clean-shaven face made me appreciate why dwarves wear beards. Without one, Nabby was God's awful ugly. He had no chin to speak of. His mouth puckered sourly. He scowled at us like we'd tracked in mud.
"Greetings, Blitzen, son of Freya," he said. "No explosions in my bar this time, I hope."
Blitzen bowed.
"Greetings, Nabby, son of Loretta. To be fair, I wasn't the one who brought the grenades. Also, this is my friend Magnus, son of
Natalie." Nabby nodded to me. His busy eyebrows were fascinating. They seemed to move like live caterpillars. I reached for a bar stool, but Blitzen stopped me.
Nabby, he said formally, may my friend use this stool? What is its name in history?
That stool is Rearrester, said Nabby. Crafted by Ganda. Once it held the tush of the Master Smith Alvis. Use it in comfort, Magnus, son of Natalie. And Blitzen, you may sit on Keisterholm, famed among stools, made by yours truly. It survived the great bar fight of 4109 AM.
My thanks.
Blitzen climbed on his stool, which was polished oak with a velvet padded seat.
A fine Keisterholm it is.
Nabby looked at me expectantly. I tried my stool, which was hard steel with no cushion. It wasn't much of a Rearrester. It was more of a Magnus Mangler, but I tried for a smile.
Yep, that's a nice stool, all right.
Blitzen rapped his knuckles on the bar.
Mead for me, Nabby, and for my friend.
Soda or something? I wasn't sure I wanted to be walking around Dwarven Sally with a mead buzz. Nabby filled two mugs and set them in front of us. Blitzen's goblet was gold on the inside, silver on the outside, decorated with images of dancing dwarf women.
That cup is Golden Bowl, said Nabby. Made by my father, Darby. And this one,
he nudged my pewter tankard,
is Boom Daddy, made by yours truly. Always ask for a refill before you reach the bottom of the cup. Otherwise,
he splayed his fingers,
Boom Daddy!
I really hoped he was kidding, but I decided to take small sips. Blitz drank his mead.
Mmm, a fine cup for quaffing. And now that we are past the formalities, Nabby, we need to speak with Junior.
A vein throbbed in Nabby's left temple.
Do you have a death wish?
Blitz reached into his pouch. He slid a single gold tear across the counter.
This one is for you, he said in a low voice. Just for making the call. Tell Junior we have more. All we want is a chance to barter.
After my experience with Ran, the word barter made me even more uncomfortable than Rearrester. Nabby looked back and forth between Blitzen and the tear, his expression vacillating between apprehension and greed. Finally, the greed won. The barkeep snatched the drop of gold.
I'll make the call. Enjoy your drinks.
He climbed off his catwalk and disappeared into the kitchen. I turned to Blitz. A few questions. He chuckled.
Only a few?
What does 4109 AM mean? Is it the time, or...
Dwarves count years from the creation of our species, Blitz said. AM is after maggots.
I decided my ears must still be defective from Ratatosk's barking.
Say what? The creation of the world. Come on, you know the story. The gods killed the largest of the giants, Ymir, and used his flesh to create Midgard. Nidavellir developed under Midgard, where maggots ate into the giant's dead flesh and created tunnels. Some of those maggots evolved, with a little help from the gods, into dwarves.
Blitzen looked proud of this historical tidbit. I decided to do my best to erase it from my long-term memory. Different question, I said. Why does my goblet have a name?
Dwarves are craftsmen, said Blitzen. We're serious about the things we make. You humans, you make 1,000 crappy chairs that all look alike and all break within a year. When we make a chair, we make one chair to last a lifetime, a chair unlike any other in the world. Cups, furniture, weapons, every crafted item has a soul and a name. You can't appreciate something unless it's good enough for a name.
I studied my tankard, which was painstakingly engraved with runes and wave designs. I wished it had a different name, like
No way will I explode. But I had to admit, it was a nice cup.
And calling Nabby son of Loretta? I asked. Or me the son of Natalie?
Dwarves are matriarchal. We trace our lineage through our mothers. Again, it makes much more sense than your patrilineal way. After all, one can only be born from a single biological mother. Unless you are the god Heimdall. He had 9 biological mothers, but that's another story.
Synapses melted in my brain. Let's move along. Freya's tears. Red gold? Sam told me that's the currency of Asgard.
Yes, but Freya's tears are 100% pure. The finest red gold in creation. For the pouch of tears we're carrying, most dwarves would give their right eyeballs.
So this guy Junior, he'll bargain with us?
Either that, Blit said, or he'll chop us into small pieces. You want some nachos while we wait?
Chapter 41 Blitz makes a bad deal. I had to hand it to Nabby. He served good near-death nachos. I was halfway through my plate of guacamole-enhanced tastiness when Junior showed up. On first sight, I wondered if it would be faster just to drain Boom Daddy and go boom, because I didn't like our chances of bartering with the old dwarf. Junior looked about 200 years old. Scraps of gray hair clung to his liver-spotted head. His beard gave Scraggly a bad name. His malicious brown eyes flitted around the bar as if he were thinking,
I hate that, and I really hate that.
He wasn't physically intimidating, shuffling along with his gold-plated walker, but he was flanked by a pair of dwarven bodyguards, each so burly that they could have been used as NFL tackle dummies. The other customers got up and quietly left, like in a scene from an old western. Blitzen and I both stood.
Junior, Blitz bowed. Thank you for meeting with us.
Some nerve, Junior snarled.
Would you like my seat?
Blitzen offered.
It is Keisterholm, made by...
No thanks, Junior said. I'll stand. Compliments of my walker, Granny Shuffler, famous among geriatric products, made by Nurse Bambi, my private assistant.
I bit the inside of my cheek. I doubted that laughing would be good diplomacy.
This is Magnus, son of Natalie,
Blitzen said. The old dwarf glared at me.
I know who he is. Found the Sword of Summer. You couldn't wait until after I died? I'm too old for this Ragnarok nonsense.
My bad, I said. I should have checked with you before I got attacked by Surt and sent to Valhalla. Blitzen coughed. The bodyguards appraised me like I might have just made their day more interesting. Junior cackled.
I like you. You're rude. Let's see this blade, then.
I showed him my magic pendant trick. In the dim neon lights of the barroom, the blade's runes glowed orange and green. The old dwarf sucked his teeth.
That's Frey's blade, all right. Bad news.
Then perhaps, Blitzen said,
you'll be willing to help us?
Help you?
Junior wheezed.
Your father was my nemesis. You besmirched my reputation, and you want my help. You've got iron guts, Blitzen, I'll give you that.
The tendons in Blitz's neck looked like they might bust his well-starched collar.
This isn't about our family feud, Junior. This is about the rope. It's about securing Fenris Wolf.
Oh, of course it is.
Junior sneered at his bodyguards.
The fact that my father, Eitri Sr., was the only dwarf talented enough to make Gleipnir, and your father, Vili, spent his life questioning the quality of the rope. That has nothing to do with it.
Blitzen clenched his pouch of red gold tears. I was afraid he might smack Junior upside the head with it.
The Sword of Summer is right here. In just 6 Midgardian nights, Surt is planning to free the wolf. We're going to do our best to stop him, but you know the rope Gleipnir is beyond its expiration date. We need information about the wolf's bindings. More importantly, we need a replacement rope just in case. Only you have the talent to make one.
Junior cupped his ear.
Say that last part again. You're talented, you crusty old...
Blitzen stopped.
Only you have the skill to make a new rope.
True.
Junior smirked.
It so happens I have a replacement rope already made. Not because of any problems with Gleipnir, mind you, or because of any of your family's scandalous accusations about its quality. Just because I like to be prepared. Unlike your father, I might add, going off alone to check on Fenris Wolf like an idiot and getting himself killed.
I had to step in front of Blitzen to keep him from attacking the old dwarf.
Okay, then, I said. Guys, this isn't the time. Junior, if you've got a new rope, that's great. Let's talk price. And, we'll also need a nice set of earrings.
Heh.
Junior wiped his mouth.
Of course you will. For Blitzen's mother, no doubt. What are you offering in payment?
Blitzen, I said. Show him. Blitz's eyes still danced with rage, but he opened the pouch and spilled some red gold tears into his palm.
Huh, said Junior. An acceptable price. Or it would be, if it wasn't from Blitzen. I'll sell you what you want for that pouch of tears. But first, my family's honor must be satisfied. It's high time we settled this feud. What do you say, son of Freya? A contest. You and me. The traditional rules. The traditional wager.
Blitzen backed into the bar. He squirmed so badly, I could almost believe he had evolved from maggots. Erase. Bad long-term memory. Erase.
Junior, he said. You know I couldn't possibly...
Shall we say tomorrow at Mossglow?
Junior asked.
The panel of judges can be headed by a neutral party. Perhaps Nabby, who I'm sure is not eavesdropping behind the bar right now.
Something banged against the catwalk. From below the counter, Nabby's muffled voice said,
I would be honored.
There you are, then, Junior smiled. Well, Blitzen, I have challenged you according to our ancient customs. Will you defend the honor of your family?
Blitzen hung his head.
Where should we meet?
The forges in Kenning Square, Junior said. Oh, this will be amusing. Come on, boys. I have to tell Nurse Bambi about it.
The old dwarf shuffled out with his bodyguards in tow. As soon as they were gone, Blitzen collapsed on Keisterholm and drained Golden Bowl. Nabby emerged from behind the counter. His caterpillar eyebrows wriggled with concern as he refilled Blitz's goblet.
This one's on the house, Blitzen. It's been nice knowing you.
He went back to the kitchen, leaving Blitz and me alone with Taylor Swift singing I Know Places. The lyrics took on a whole new meaning in a subterranean dwarf world.
Are you going to explain what just happened? I asked Blitz.
What is this contest at Mosglow? Also, what is Mosglow?
Mosglow, Blitzen stared into his cup. Dwarf version of dawn, when the moss begins to glow. As for the contest,
he swallowed back a sob.